This is a Capricorn FM podcast. This grade 12 lesson is proudly brought to you by the Department of Education. Working together, we can do more providing quality education.
Today, we are getting into the geography lesson with Mr. Sibudugu, and he will be joining us to tell us more about what the lesson is about today. And of course, welcome, sir. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
You can take over.
Thank you very much, and welcome, everyone. Welcome, the listener of Capricorn FM. This is Mr. Sibudugu Joseph Samson from St. Brendan's Catholic Secondary. Tonight, we'll be focusing on geographical skills and techniques. In our geography paper one, we have got geographical skills and techniques, which is map work generally. It's 30 marks. And we also have it in paper two, which is also 30 marks. So tonight, I'll be focusing on the two main topics. I'll be focusing on calculation, more especially focusing on cross-section and method that we should apply, and vertical exaggeration. Thereafter, we look at geographical skills, more especially when we look at settlement, rural and urban, when we apply it on a map work. So some of this calculation, we have discussed it in the previous lessons, but tonight I would like you to know something based on cross-section. Now, what is a cross-section? A cross-section is a vertical section on a contour map drawn to show landscape in profile. Let me just repeat it. A cross-section is a vertical section on a contour map drawn to show the landscape in profile. It is a representation of what the natural landscape will look like if a straight line were drawn on it and it was then cut vertically down along the line into the Earth's crust. So while you are treating map work, more especially topographical map, you can be asked to draw a cross-section from point A to point B. Point A maybe can be a trig beacon, and B, let's say another distance, can be, let's say, a spot height or a benchmark, where after all, we want to see how does the natural landscape look like. And I want to show you the geographical technique or a skill that you should have in order to draw that cross-section. A method to do that: one, you need to draw a baseline. For accuracy, use a very sharp pencil on the contour map joining the two given points. Thereafter, you need to have a small piece of paper. Then you will fold a piece of paper so that it has a straight edge. Three, you place the straight edge along the baseline you have drawn on the contour map. Four, you mark the two given points on the paper. If the first point was a trig beacon, then you'll have to mark and indicate the. And if the other one was a benchmark, you need also to mark it along the contour line that touches the paper. And now, after marking these two given points, you write the given height next to the mark. Now, mark every contour line that touches the paper and write down its height. And be careful, as the same contour lines might touch the paper more than once, more especially where it is, where we're having a cliff or a waterfall. The contour line, two or three contour lines will come into contact, and be careful about it. Then, mark all the rivers, roads, railway lines, mountain summit, power lines, telegraph lines, in fact, everything that is on the baseline that touches the paper. And later, check to see that you have marked all the contour heights correctly. Accuracy in this case is very essential. So work with a very sharp pencil. So now, just to indicate some of the few important points, more especially when you draw on a graph paper, we'll have the horizontal axis and the vertical axis. Now, horizontal axis, you'll draw it with a pencil. This represents the distance along the surface. From that point A to point B, that is where it will be represented as horizontal axis. It has the same scale as the contour map. Usually we use 1:50,000. And it must be equal to the length of the baseline you have drawn on the contour map. Whereas the vertical axis, this represents the height above sea level. Use a vertical scale, which is always given to the insert of the map division along the vertical scale. For example, 1 centimeter represents 40 meters, or else it can be 1 centimeter. One centimeter represents 20 meters. So in most cases, from one contour line to the other, the contour interval is 20 meters. That is what we'll be using on our topographical map. When you put the vertical scale, always start with one unit below the lowest contour height and end with the unit above the highest contour height. In other words, if you were measuring a distance which is having a height of 1,000, for example, and the highest point is 1,300, so at the bottom, you will start with the lowest point, the lowest height of 1,000. Then you go up. The difference will be 20, 20, 20, because our contour interval is 20 meters. And when you draw that from one unit to the other, when you use a ruler, preferably the distance should be a centimeter from each height that you are going to draw there. Now, the vertical scale must usually be much larger than the horizontal scale. Otherwise, it is not easy to see the shape of the land along the profile. Now, place the folded piece of paper along the horizontal axis so that your first mark point is on the vertical axis. Start with this point. Carefully draw the vertical line in pencil from each section and mark the point on the paper upwards with the correct height according to the scale. And end at your last mark point. Drop a vertical line from the last mark point to horizontal axis. Join each point by drawing a smooth contour freehand line from point to point. In this case, do not use a ruler to join the point. Then after that, you label the following on the graph paper: all roads, rivers, railway, or anything with an ink, the first and the last point. Give your cross-section a title and underline it. For example, you will indicate that the cross-section from spot height 632 to 1043. So you are just giving it a title. So in other words, it is also very important for you to know how to draw a cross-section, even to define a cross-section. So now on the horizontal scale, obviously we are using 1:50,000. You write the vertical scale on the side next to the vertical axis and underline it, where you'll indicate that 1 centimeter represents 20 meters. So I will expect you to try to do it during your spare time so that you can learn how to draw a cross-section. After doing that, I want to take this time so that we can also calculate the vertical exaggeration. What is vertical exaggeration? Vertical exaggeration is the relationship between the horizontal and vertical scale. That is, it tells you the ratio by which the height is exaggerated. Meaning that after drawing that cross-section, there is a time where you can also exaggerate the scale. So that is why, for accuracy purpose, you need to know how to calculate for the vertical exaggeration so that you can see by which height the scale is exaggerated. For example, if you want to know how to calculate this, there is a formula for calculating for vertical exaggeration. That is, vertical exaggeration is equals to vertical scale over horizontal scale. The formula is VE, which stands for vertical exaggeration, is equals to vertical scale over horizontal scale. Say you are given a calculation to say, calculate the vertical exaggeration if the horizontal scale is 1:50,000 and the vertical scale is 1 centimeter, represent 20 meters, and you are expected to calculate for vertical exaggeration. What do you do? You start by finding the vertical scale. In this situation, we are given that vertical scale is 1 centimeter, represent 20 meters. You will just write 1:20. Then that will be in a form of a ratio. And the horizontal scale is also given to us, which is 1:50,000. So if you check, the vertical scale is in meters and horizontal scale is in centimeters. What do we do? Then we need to convert that vertical scale of 1 that represents 20 meters to centimeters. Then the conversion of that, we multiply that 20 by 100. Why 100? Because there is 100 centimeters in a meter. So when you convert meters into centimeters, then you should multiply it by 100. If you multiply 20 by 100, you'll end up having 2,000. And that will be now our scale for vertical scale, which is 1:2,000, whereas the one of horizontal scale is 1:50,000. So now let's calculate. Our formula is vertical exaggeration is equals to vertical scale over horizontal scale. Given this situation, our vertical scale now, as you know, it is 1/2,000 divided by 1/50,000. This is the same like 1/2,000 multiplied by 50,000/1. Then you need to cancel those zero zeros for 2,000. You'll remain with 2, and those triple zero from 50,000, you'll remain with 50. Then you'll end up having 50/2. And then if you divide these 2 into 50, the scale is exaggerated 25 times. That is how simple is it, because 2 actually goes into 50 25 times. That is how I will expect you to do it. Let me just also give you another example where you will be asked to calculate for vertical exaggeration if the horizontal scale is 1:50,000 and vertical scale 1 represent 50 meters. I hope you get it right. You are calculating the vertical exaggeration if the horizontal scale is 1:50,000 and vertical scale is 1 centimeter represent 50 meters. So already you know our formula. Our formula is vertical exaggeration is equals to vertical scale over horizontal scale. So now our vertical scale as given is one that represents 50 meters. Like I said, when you look at this 50 meters compared with the horizontal scale of 1:50,000, that is in centimeters, then you will have to convert this vertical scale into centimeters. And the method of doing it as a geographical scale, you multiply that 50 meters by 100 centimeters, then your answer will be 5,000 centimeters, of which our vertical scale now is 1:5,000, whereas our horizontal scale as given is 1:50,000. So when you try to do the calculation, you will simply say 1/5,000 divided by 1/50,000. This is the same like 1/5,000 multiplied by 50,000/1. And you should start by canceling those zero from 5,000. You'll remain with 5. And then you also cancel those 3 zeros from 50,000. You'll remain with 50. And then when you try to divide to say, how many times does 5 goes into 5? It's 1. How many times does 5 goes into 50? It's 10. In other words, the answer will be 10 times. The scale given here is exaggerated 10 times. So that is how simple you can calculate for vertical exaggeration. When you go to the examination room with this background, one, you should start by knowing exactly what is vertical exaggeration. And the second skill that you should have, obviously the formula you can be given, how to calculate this vertical exaggeration. Because the scale, obviously, on our map, the contour interval is 1:20. So you will actually know that, okay, 1 centimeter in this case represents this one. You can also be given that. Then you check also our topographical scale. In most cases, you know that our scale for horizontal scale is 1:50,000. Then after that, you calculate. You will get it nice. So this simple exercise, you need to calculate it, then you will get the correct answer. And then in most cases, this vertical exaggeration, you will write it out of 5 marks, of which these 5 marks can help you to score more marks during examination. When you are given a map, all what you need to do, you just check whether the area covered by your map is rural or urban settlement. Now, how will you know that this is a rural settlement? You need to look at the land use zones, even the area covered by settlement. Say, for example, you are given a map of Pongola, which is 2731 BC. When you look around, you'll be able to say that, oh, there is a lot of green color which is appearing over there. And you should actually also check what type of land use zone is related with rural settlement. Obviously, you'll have types of farming, commercial farming, subsistence farming, extensive or intensive farming. And after that, you should also be able to define that, because when you are doing map application, then they will ask you to say what type of farming is depicted in block D7. When you look at that, then if there's a cultivated land, you'll be also asked to say, what type of farming is that one? So that you can indicate whether it's commercial or subsistence farming. So I'm going to take you through this so that you should be able to understand. Even when you go to urban settlement, you need also to have that skill of checking the land use zone. If the large part of the area is covered by settlement, then after that, you will be able to check the street pattern. You will be able to check the type of roads appearing over there. So I'm going to start by looking at rural settlement when you are doing application and what also influenced that particular settlement. Just to give you an example, there are factors that influence the situation of a settlement. It can be either road, railway, harbor, or airport. Even the distance to the other settlement or market, or access to resource or service. Just to give you an example of Durban. Durban is a city. If you are asked to say, what factor influenced that situation of a settlement, then we have got a harbor where you will have water transport exchange with rail or road transport. So you can be able to tell. So we also have town or city, which are found where there is an airport. There will also be a settlement around it. So you need also to check what factor influenced the situation. And there is a lot of economic development that takes place along the roads. If we can look at Polokwane, for example, there is a lot of economic development along the roads closer to the city. Then you should be able to indicate what type of land use zone is that one. The moment when you move away from the city, that's where you'll find that there is plots where there is also farming activities taking place there. So if you have got a map that also covers that part, you will have commercial farming and subsistence farming. So in simple terms, you should be able to tell whether the area is rural settlement or urban settlement. Let's check now the situation of rural settlement. You can be asked about the influence of a site and situation of settlement. Say, for example, if the map covers a desert, there could be a wet point settlement. When you analyze so that you can interpret, how will you know that this is a wet point settlement? A wet point settlement will be found in areas where there is shortage of water. The settlement is located closer to the source of water. We'll have an oasis, so the buildings will be around a fountain, around an oasis. Then you can end up telling us to say, this type of settlement is a wet point settlement. The first skill that you should have, you need to read, analyze, and interpret. Sometimes you can also be asked when you are doing application and interpretation to be asked about a dry point settlement. How will you know that this is a dry point settlement? Then this will be a settlement which is found away from marshy, flood-prone areas because of water is a threat. They locate on a higher ground. In other words, you will find a river at the bottom. The buildings will be on a hilly or mountain. So, in other words, they are trying to avoid water because water is a threat. If there could be flooding, so there could be a problem. So you can be able to tell because the buildings are on the top of the hill or mountain. Another settlement can also be influenced by defense. There are two reasons that I can give. One, a building which is influenced by defense, that's where they can build a settlement on top of the mountain so that they can see the enemies coming from a distance. Just give an example of Lesotho. a lot of villages are on top of the mountain for the sake of security and defense. And then let us also check a settlement which is found at the loop of Mienda. One other reason for having a settlement engulfed by the loop of Mienda, it's for safety reason. So when you read and interpret the map, you should have that geographical scale. So there is also a point referred to accessibility or communication, where you have settlements along the ford, where you have settlements along the gap, gateway. Please take note of that. That is very important. So after looking at the map, say, for example, you can have a map of a particular area. Just check the land use, and that land use will tell you whether the area is rural or urban by looking at the function. Like I said, I'll start by explaining some land use, more especially focusing on rural. Thereafter, I'll look at urban. In a rural settlement, expect questions that will be referred to settlement pattern. You will be asked to say, identify the settlement pattern depicted in block A6. If it is a dispersed rural settlement, start by knowing what is a dispersed settlement. Dispersed settlement, that is where houses or farms are far apart or scattered. That is the geographical skill that I would like you to have. When you look at the rural settlement, you will be expected to know the pattern. One other example of a pattern is dispersed rural settlement. Now, if you are asked to say, give the reason for the answer you have given, you should be able to tell that dispersed rural settlements, houses are far apart. That is very important. Then you can also be asked, on the same note, the advantages and disadvantage of that particular settlement. Where you have isolated, where you have dispersed rural settlement, where farmers are independent, they are staying far apart, then you should actually know the advantages, and then you should also know the disadvantages for that. So one of the advantages is that farmers will be independent. They will also work on their land, produce and make a lot of money on farms, unlike when you are staying in a nucleated settlement, because land will be too small, where you'll end up practicing subsistence farming. And dispersed farmstead make large profit, and there's a lot of privacy. So you should also know that. In other words, we're applying knowledge we have learned when we study for content, then you will be applying it, focusing on map work. In a situation where you'll be asked about the disadvantages of the isolated or dispersed, you actually know that there is lack of social life. People can easily be targeted by criminals because of isolation. And basic services such as schools are far away. So there are so many things. Let us look to a situation where in a rural settlement, we have got a nucleated settlement. You will be asked to say, what type of settlement is that one? For rural settlement, we have got three types of settlement. We have got isolated farmstead, we have got hamlet, we also have village. So the best example of a nucleated settlement in a rural settlement, that is a village. And if you are asked to say, why do you say the settlement is nucleated? Because houses or farms are closer together. Can you see how simple is it? Don't ever lose some of these marks because they are very important. And you will also be asked to give the advantages of such settlement where people, if they are nucleated, they can also do sharing of farming equipment and ideas, community activities, social advantage in simple terms, and even safety advantages, because when people are together, they can able to defend or protect one another. So the disadvantages is lack of privacy. With that small land, they will make small profit. Along the rural area again, we can also have linear or ribbon. if you can check along the roads, more especially N1, there's a lot of farming activities which are taking place there. There will be houses which are arranged in a linear pattern along the road. So you'll be asked to identify the type of pattern. Obviously, that is linear. What about that? That is linear. Why linear? Because linear is found along the road, along the canal, so many reasons. So now, houses are located along the road, narrow valley, canal or ridge. So you should actually have that particular skill. And while you are still looking at a village or rural settlement, you should also know the land use zones. Land use zones here, we're referring to farming communities, subsistence farming. You will be expected to know what type of farming is taking place there. If it's subsistence farming, the land will be too small. They plant variety of crops, and they do not contribute much to the economy. So you'll be able to say that. But in case where we have got commercial farming, if you are asked to say, why do you say this is commercial farming? These are large farms that are capital intensive, and the main purpose is to make profit. So when you look at the map, you will be able to say that, oh, there are orchards over there, and they covered a very big land. We also have cultivated land, but it covers also a big land. So you can be able to give those reasons, because those reasons that you will be expected to give, they are not just coming out of an empty space. No. You will start by reading and you analyze, then you will be able to interpret. That is one geographical skill that you should also have. And just also check the type of water supply around the commercial farming. Sometimes you'll find rivers. You'll also find dams, because those water supply also influence the type of farming activity which is taking place over there. So you can also be able to differentiate between the intensive farming and extensive farming. So that is also very important, more especially when we look at rural settlements. So in other words, for the sake of application and interpretation, I just want to summarize it for you. Start by looking at the type of buildings, the settlement. Is it an isolated farm street? Is it a hamlet or a village? Thereafter, you also check the type of land use zone around. If that is a normal village around where most of us come from, you will have a lot of subsistence farming. And in that particular situation, they use or they have variety of crops which are produced in that particular area, because the main aim is to supply for family needs. But in a situation where it is commercial, for the crops that they are producing, we look at the green color. That green color will be representing crops which are produced. Then you will be able to tell whether it is orchard or cultivated land. From the reference, there is sign, there is symbol that indicates whether this is a cultivated land, whether this is an orchard. Then there will also be a clue that will also be telling you what type of crop is produced there. If that is an area like Cape Town where they are producing grapes, you'll find also somewhere where there is wine cellar. And then in case where people are producing wheat, like areas around Free State or where they planted some millets, there will be the silos where they also store the grains over there. even when you look at the type of industries which are found over there. So it will also give you the direction of what type of crop is produced in that particular area. So that is also very important. And then even the type of drainage can tell whether the type of farming is crop farming or it is stock farming. Because where we have got stock farming, you'll find some small ponds where there will be water for drinking for the stock. In case where it is crop, then you will find some water canals and whatsoever. So this will also give you a clue. So please take note of some of those skills will help you to know whether this is cattle farming or stock farming or crop farming. So now, in a situation where we'll be looking at questions based on urban settlement, one, back in your mind, you should also expect question referred to classification of urban settlement. If you are given maybe a town, then you will be expected to know whether that particular town is a central place town, or is a trade and transport town, or is a specialized town. So in other words, the main skill that one should have is to actually be able to identify a central place town on a topographical map. If that is a trade and transport, there are also some other skills that one should have. Let me just share some of the information with regard to how will you know that this is a central place. In other words, if we have got a town which is a central place, the main aim, as you know, is to provide urban service to the surrounding rural area. Most of the towns here in South Africa are central place. So you will have a town, but around it, you will be able to say that there is farming communities or whatsoever. The main aim is to supply urban service to the surrounding rural areas. If there is so many farms, they need to buy equipment, they need to buy fertilizers, petrol, diesel, whatsoever that they can use in farms, even groceries. So in other words, you will be able to tell that this is a central place. And if the area is having maybe a trade and transport town, just check if that is a break of bulk point. Like I've given you an example of Durban, where they can give you a part where you'll be able to see that here it's a harbor. We have got an ocean on this side, and on this side there is a land. Then we have got city. So you'll be able to know that this is where one means of transport will be replaced by the other, where water transport will be replaced by a railway line. That is forming part of trade and transport city, which is a break of bulk point. Then we also have the gateway or gap. This originates where there are physical barriers like mountain pass. So you need to check the contour lines. If the contour lines is indicating that, oh, okay, here there is a pass, and then you have got, let's say, a town in between there, you will be able to know that this is a gateway settlement or a gap town. Sometimes along the road, you can also have a junction town. A junction town, it will be found where transport routes converge. Then you need to look at the map where you'll be able to see roads coming together. Then you have got development around, along the road. Then you'll be able to tell that this is a junction town. So in case where we have got a specialized town, it includes mining town. If that is a mining community, you'll be able to find where on the map there will be somewhere where it is written digging, somewhere you'll find some conveyor belt, somewhere there will be, say, the name of the mine. If it is for coal, there will be whatever colliery. If it is for gold, they will give you titles of different mines as long as they are mining gold and whatsoever. If they are also extracting diamond, there will be diamond mentioning the particular name. And then a specialized town can also be an industrial or a resort or a military or fishing town. So that is the skill that I will expect you to know. If that is a mining town, just look at activities taking place around there. We'll have excavated land, we'll have these names that will remind you to say, oh, this is a mining town. If that is a resort, there will also be a name given there. If it's an industrial town, you check the raw material produced around that particular area. If they are producing grapes, then you'll have maybe the name of the company where they are processing grapes to make wine. So that is also very important. If that is a military town, so they will also be shooting range and whatsoever not far from even the aerodrome, because they also have facilities like a place where the planes will land, even the helicopters. So take note of that. So, but this specialized town, generally, they are urban settlement with one dominant function. Please don't forget that. That is very important. And we need also, that was a question based on question, if the main focus is of classification. You can also have question that is based on street pattern with regard to urban settlement. When you look at the city, their street pattern, we have got gradient pattern, and you need to know why, how gradient pattern look like. In other words, streets will intersect at right angles, and in most cases, they are parallel to each other. And this is one of the old street pattern. Even if you go to the center of Polokwane, you'll find this type of pattern. So you need to familiarize yourself to say, okay, the old part of the city, in most cases, they have got this part of pattern. Then you should also be able, again, to give the advantages and disadvantages of that street pattern. That is also very important. So this is how best you can score marks as far as math work is concerned in geography. Radial or spider web. This one, the roads radiate away from central point. So by just merely looking at your map work, look at the area covered by settlement, you need to tell what type of street pattern in this particular town or city look like. If it's a gradient plane, you should be able to tell. If that is radial, you should also be able to tell. And then what will be now the advantages also, even the disadvantages of the radial pattern, that is very important. So one good thing about it, when you write this paper, you will have studied the content based on this street pattern that I'm mentioning here. There is also another street pattern which is called unplanned or irregular. And then how does the unplanned or irregular pattern look like on a topographical map or even orthophoto map? This one will have a maze of streets with no apparent order, pulling traffic to flow. Somewhere we'll find a small maze of streets, some small, some long, but they're intersecting, they're main. There's no focal point. Then you should actually know that this is unplanned street pattern. So it is associated with broken relief. So please take note of that. That is very important. We also have the planned irregular pattern. So this one, most of the modern cities, they are having this planned irregular for the reason of allowing traffic to flow. So for you to support the idea that this is a planned irregular pattern, we'll also know by the reason that you will give to support the answer that this is a planned street. Why do you say it's a planned? So there will be street length and blocks will vary so that it can be easy to allow traffic flow, but sometimes people can easily get lost over there. So you need to know the advantages and disadvantages. I'm trying just to cut it short so that I can also look at the land use zones. Now, given a situation of an urban settlement, there are land use zones which are very important. The most common one, which is more accessible, that is the CBD. You can be asked to say, what type of land use zone is depicted as letter L? And the arrow will be pointing at the city center. So if the arrow is pointing at the city center, you actually know that the land use zone over there is CBD. And you will also be asked to give the reason. And then you know that a lot of business, a lot of urban activities take place at the CBD. So you'll be able to tell, even looking at the intra route, which are also getting over there, because all the roads, some of them, they will be passing through the city center. That is very important. So you need also to know the characteristics of the CBD, because with that background of characteristics of the CBD, it will help you to give the sound reasons, because we will find the commercial in some other instance. We also have the OBD, and why OBD is situated over there. Let me just quickly look now at the second one, because if I have to indicate all the characteristics, time won't allow us. We also have the transition zone. You can also be asked to say, what type of land use zone is depicted maybe by letter B? That is an area which is closer to the CBD. You should actually know that that is the transition zone, or the zone of urban decay. And at this particular zone, there is a mixed land use where there is residential, office, light industry, wholesale. You can name some of these things. And this is the zone where you can also find flats, because here I use the word residential. Flats are found at the transition zone. So you'll be asked to say, what type of land use zone is that one? Then give the reason to support your answer. So you should be able to tell us. You need also to know a land use zone, more especially for residential. When we look at the zone for residential on the map, there is residential for the high-income residential. The skill that I will expect you to know, why do you say that one is high-income residential? The residential is supposed to be away from the CBD, away from heavy industrial area. Usually, this is located at the outskirts of urban area. What could be the reason? The high-income is supposed to be in a place where it is quiet, where there's no congestion, no crime. You see, a lot of reasons that can be given. We also have the residential estate or the golf estate. How will you know that this is the residential estate? And then remember, there is a growing trend in South Africa where houses are built in a luxurious settings. Residential areas are built around some features. In this case, it's a residential area which is found next to the golf course. And just imagine what type of people are involved in the golf activities. Are those people who have got something in their pocket? So it caters for a very wealthy communities, because you will be asked to say, why do you say this is a golf estate? Why do you say this is a residential estate? This is where there are wealthy community. There is also a community or a settlement for the middle income. Even in this case, just look at the type of homes they are having. Homes are of medium size and can vary from single story to the simplest type of settlement. But location in this case, they also vary. We also have the low income. The low income, you'll find this type of settlement next to the industry, next to the public transport. Sometimes you will find a settlement where there is no space for gardens, no recreational activities. The houses are old, sometimes neglected. And in the low income, one other characteristic that you should know, we have high density housing, high density housing. So these skills that I'm mentioning, that is one thing that you should also use when you studied MEP. There is also informal settlement. If you actually know the characteristics of informal settlement, what type of housing is found there? Industrial zone also. We have got light industry and heavy industry. The heavy industries are located outside. They are found away from the CBD because they cause a lot of pollution. Whereas light industries are found at the transition zone, sometimes at the CBD, because this one do not produce noise or air pollution. So you need also to look at the rural and urban fringe that is found at the periphery of the urban area, where we find a lot of functions like golf estate, airport, shopping malls, cemetery, sewage works, shooting range. So you need to know the reason. Why do you say this is a rural and urban fringe? I will encourage you to go and look at different land use zones, the type of roads, what is the development which is taking place along the roads. Tomorrow, we are going to look at economic geography. That is another module which is very important as far as geography is concerned. Just have a blessed night. Thank you very much, and thank you for listening.
Thank you so much, Mr. Sibudugu. Have yourself a wonderful night, too.
Thank you, ma'am.
And with that said, we are done. The Afterglow is done. And handing over to Miss Lotolani, she's obviously going to be taking you on a journey to midnight. And of course, her show starts with a agriculture lesson as well. Is it agriculture?
Yes.
Okay. I thought I got it wrong. With that said, have a good night and I'm out of here.
That was a Capricorn FM podcast. For more podcasts, visit capricornfm.co.za.